right here. You're not waiting. You're not on the waiting list. But I'm waiting. Well, you're waiting to be on the waiting list. That's not really waiting. First, you have to wait. Then when you wait long enough, you get on the waiting list, and then you're waiting. Right now, you're just waiting to be waiting. Huh? I don't understand that. It's... What? No, what's on second? Who? Who's on first? Well, I don't even know. Nah, he's on third. See, we're waiting to wait. You just, it's like when you go into the deli, and you know, there's that little number you pull, now serving 45. If you get in there and you don't pull a number, you're just waiting to wait. You haven't even started waiting yet. You got to get the number so you can wait, but if you haven't got the number, you're just waiting to wait. And if you're waiting to wait, you're not really waiting, and therefore you're not on the waiting list. See? We could do a whole Seinfeld episode on this. That's our VA. That's what we're doing right now. But remember now, it's not the problem that it's a government socialized medical system. That's not the problem. It's not the problem of the whole ideology of working for the government close enough for government work. That's not the problem. No, the problem is we're not spending enough money. If we just spend more money, then everybody would be on the real waiting list and not on the fake waiting list where they're waiting to wait for the waiting list to actually be waiting instead of just waiting to be waiting. Then they'd really be waiting. If only we could just spend enough money, that's what would get it done. No, that's not the problem. That's not the problem. I had a caller to my show that worked as an intern at a VA hospital on one side of the street, and he also worked at a private hospital on the other side of the street. And he said, when I was at the VA hospital, I was told to see no more than two patients before lunch and no more than two patients after lunch. He said, across the street at the private hospital, I was instructed I needed to see 8 to 10 patients before lunch and 8 to 10 patients after lunch. I said, well, why? Why would the VA tell you to do that? And he said, it was the culture at the VA. He said, they told me that's enough work. Two before and two after lunch is enough work. We don't need to work any harder than that. That's what they told me. Wow. And there's studies out there. Charles Krauthammer on Fox News last week talked about a study he saw. And, you know, he's a psychiatrist, he's a medical doctor, he's also a Fox News contributor, that said cardiac doctors at the VA see one patient for every eight patients private cardiac doctors see in private hospitals. Why? Krauthammer believes it's because the private doctors get paid based on the number of patients they see, and the doctors at the VA are on salary. The incentives are totally twisted up. Now, look. I'm not saying all these doctors are bad. I'm not saying all these nurses are bad. I'm saying that when you get into this government system, these things happen. When you get into a single-payer system, these things happen. Get ready for all this under Obamacare. This is the only way, by the way, that it ever turns out. So they're finding, yeah, these guys were on secret waiting lists. And in fact, there's 42 VA facilities they're looking at now. 42. And guess what? This inspector general is worried about the risk of destruction of evidence, manipulation of data, coaching the staff on how to respond to our interview questions. I mean, they're worried that these guys are trying to cover up the criminal acts that they've been doing, and they are criminal. Did you see the piece in the Daily Beast? The guy from Texas, the whistleblower, works at the Texas VA. He said, quote, for lack of a better term, you've got an organized crime syndicate. People up on top are suddenly afraid they may actually be prosecuted, and they're pressuring the little guys to cover it all up. I see it in the executives' eyes. They're worried. They should be worried. It's criminal. When you are lying about seeing people, when you're lying about putting them on a secret waiting list, and you're not giving them the care that they need, that's criminal, even if they don't die. And it looks like some of them have. It's criminal. And then there's the fraud of lying about it to the federal government so you can get your bonus. And that's what he said this was about. He said, look, and if these VA directors don't report good numbers, they're the outlier. They won't stay a director very long. They certainly won't get promoted. No one's getting rewarded for honesty. They pretty much have to lie. If they don't, they won't go anywhere. Weighted more heavily than other performance measures, the wait time numbers alone count for 50% of the executive career field bonus. It's a pretty powerful motivator. Yeah, so we had to lie. Oh, don't believe that for a second. No. You tell the truth, and you try and fix it, and you realize, hey, you might not get a bonus until this gets fixed, and you go up to the top and start screaming and say, hey, look, guys, there's no way we're the only VA like this. We're telling you the truth. I think you're going to find these other people are lying. And you blow the whistle. Imagine if a private hospital and private doctors and private insurance groups were doing this, and the outrage that you'd be seeing from President Obama right now, and how many people he'd be trying to fire and throw in jail, and yet they haven't even started a criminal investigation on this yet. Oh, hold on. Let's go to Nancy Pelosi, cut one here. And you want to talk about knowing whether it's a scandal or not? Listen to Nancy Pelosi.
Well, I think any time that our men and women in uniform are not served in the manner which they deserve, you could perhaps call it a scandal.
Well, perhaps.
Because it's scandalous mm-hmm. that they're not. Whether it is a scandal with intention and the rest of that, the evidence remains to be seen.
Oh.
But the fact is that they haven't been served worthy of their sacrifice or their role in our country.
Is Nancy reading the paper? We haven't seen yet whether it's really a scandal? Are you kidding? I mean, she wants to protect the president and her party so badly that she's still willing to lie about the waiting list, the secret waiting list, where you're waiting to wait. Let's talk to Becky, Detroit, line one. Becky, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp, in for the doctor. Go right ahead.
Hi, Greg. I'm listening to all of this, and it's really upsetting me. I had to apply for the Obamacare, and I got it. My coverage goes into effect on June 1st. I still haven't received any of my paperwork, cards, anything like that.
I'm sure that's in the mail. It'll be there any day, Becky.
Okay. But what I'm saying is, once I got the coverage, that as of June 1st, I have 60 days to sign up to make an appointment with my primary care physician.
Right.
And that means I'm going to be seen in the next 60 days. I'm not a vet. I'm a 44-year-old single mom in Detroit, Michigan. And I'm going to be seen sooner than someone that has went out, busted their butt for our country, and these men and women are sitting around waiting.
Yep.
But because of Obamacare, because of, you know, this was the coverage I had 60 days to do it. And then apparently, if I don't get in within 60 days, I lose my coverage.
Well, and that's the other thing, Becky. You're assuming you're actually going to see somebody in 60 days. I hope you do. I think you will. Thanks for the call. Obamacare is just starting, and it still does use pseudo-private insurance. I say pseudo because if they tell you what insurance you have to have, how much it's going to cost, what the doctors have to do, and what drugs you're allowed to take, is it really private? But anyway, it's still at the early stages, and the early stages will be great. You know what? There's a great piece that was in the Wall Street Journal yesterday by some doctors from the VA, and they're saying the really sad thing is the best thing that can happen to a vet is for him to need care that his VA doesn't have, because then they give him a voucher and let him go to the private sector and get it, and they get right in. Huh. Maybe we could try that for all of them. But hey, this is really about money. We're not spending enough money. Oh, really? I'm going to get you the details on that one in just a second. 855-400-SAVAGE gets you in. 855-400-SAVAGE. My name's Greg Knapp. In for the doctor on this. Hey, my name's Greg Knapp. In for Dr. Savage on the Savage Nation. 855-400-SAVAGE gets you in. 855-400-SAVAGE. Yes, we're talking about the VA problem. And I've got a question for you. Do you work or have you worked at the VA? And can you tell us what's going on? Now, I understand there's a lot of good care going on. I know a lot of people that are happy with what's happened with them at the VA, but this whole secret waiting list thing and the slowdown seems to be pretty rampant. 42 different VA hospitals that they're investigating now. Have you worked at one? Have you seen this? Have you seen problems? Just call us right now and let us know. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-SAVAGE. Let me go to Dave, KKOB, New Mexico, line three. Dave, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp, filling in for the doctor. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon. You know, this problem with the VA, give the veterans the dignity of having medical care that you're supposed to have promised them when they served our country. You know, I say give them an advanced Medicare card. Do away with the VA, turn it over to the private sector, that people in the private sector know what they're doing. You might have some people in the VA that are honest workers that work for our vets, but the majority of these bureaucrats that you have in the VA, I'm retired and I chose not to take the VA care. I have TRICARE and Medicare, and I'm very happy with that. But these people have been doing this for the last, that I know of, the last 50 years.
Yeah, Dave, thanks for the call. I think you're dead on right that it should be privatized. I've been saying it for at least a decade on the air. I know tons of other people have too. But here's why they won't do it. Because, see, if the government admits that they can't do this well and that the private sector can do it better, that upsets their whole system. That upsets everything they want to do, the people on the left and some of the people on the right. No, the government can't give up that kind of control. Oh, no, we know how to do it. We just need more money. And we just went over that. That's not the problem. That's not the real problem. Dr. Hal Schertz wrote a piece. He's a pediatric urological surgeon and medical school instructor. And he wrote this piece for the Wall Street Journal, Doctors' War Stories from VA Hospitals. He said the best thing that a patient in the VA system could hope for was that the services he needed were unavailable. Why? Because then you get outsourced. Then you go to doctors in the community where they would have their problems promptly addressed. He said when doctors tried to speed things up at the VA, they weren't rewarded. They were punished. He said, in my experience at VA hospitals in San Antonio and San Diego, patients were seen in clinics that were understaffed and overscheduled. Appointments for x-rays and other tests had to be scheduled months in advance, longer for surgery. You understand the wait list now? Hospital administrators limited operating time. You ready? They made sure that operations stopped by 3 p.m. Not that they didn't start after 3 p.m., but that they were done by 3 p.m. Wow. So they had to ration the slots. Scott Barber, an orthopedic surgeon and a friend of Dr. Schertz, trained at the Miami VA, he said, in an attempt to get more patients onto the operating room schedule, he enlisted fellow residents to clean the operating rooms between cases, transport patients from their rooms into the surgical suites, but instead of getting praised for their hard work, the chief of surgery reprimanded the doctors, put a stop to it. He said, you're not solving a problem, you're making federal workers look bad, and you're creating more work for others. I can't kid you enough about this. It's true. And at the VA hospital in St. Louis, urologist Michael Packer had difficulty getting charts from the medical records department, so he and another resident just started hunting them down on their own. See, it was easier for the department workers to say, hey, we can't find that chart, than to actually go through the trouble of looking for it. And without the records, the patients couldn't begin getting their care. After the doctors started doing this, it didn't take long before they were warned to stand down. They weren't allowed to do it. This is the kind of stuff we're talking about. Let me talk to Sheila, KSFO, former VA nurse. Sheila, welcome to the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knappen for the doctor. Go right ahead.
Oh, hi. I'm glad to be on.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I was a travel nurse a couple years ago at Fort Miley, San Francisco VA. I'm an emergency room critical care nurse, but I happen to be working on the cardiac floor. I was talking, some of the nurses were given $35,000 bonuses to come out from Illinois, Maine, to work at the VA. I saw them sit on their computer and actually not really reassess or go check on their patients. And there was one incident which I saw a nurse walk out of a room. A man, she says, where's the crash cart? Where's the code cart? And I got up off the my chair. I went right into the room. The gentleman was dying in a cardiac arrest. I quickly started CPR. And that nurse had no clue, and this was, she was a VA nurse. And by the grace of God, this gentleman lived. But because I'm a separate, I was a travel nurse from another. I said, I saw things that I addressed to the head nurse, and as far as I know, I don't think anything was being done. And I just felt in my heart, my goodness, they're getting $35,000 to come from other parts of the country to work in San Francisco. And I didn't see the compassion and the care that they should have had.
So, Sheila, you're a traveling nurse. You've been to a lot of different hospitals. So you were seeing this as definitely not the type of care you're used to providing and seeing at these other hospitals, right?
No. In another incident, a gentleman had chest on both arms. I come on the day shift. The nurse had been giving him this high-potency Dilaudid medicine all night long. And then I went to assess the patient in the morning, and his casts were all askew, and it took me forever to get the orthopedic doctor there to say, wait a minute, we're just not going to medicate him. We need to redo these casts.
So, Sheila, when you started complaining about this, you know, to the people you were working with, about, hey, this isn't how things are supposed to go, what did they tell you?
I was ostracized, and I, because of my standards, I worked at UCSF and many other places. I said, you know, this is terrible. And my father was a World War II vet, and my nephew, two nephews are Marine and Navy, so I would always approach my care as if they were my family.
Of course. Good stuff. Thank you so much, Sheila. I appreciate it. I want to get Josh in, too. He used to work for the VA. He's on line 7, KBOI, Idaho. Josh, welcome to the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp, in for the doctor. Go right ahead.
All right, I'm going to tell you the three reasons right now why everything is all messed up. The first reason is you've got a lot of these, like you said, salary-paid physicians and doctors, but the VA isn't their primary job. They're usually a doctor somewhere else, and they come into the VA and do whatever. So, of course, they take more care into the job that's paying them more money instead of actually hiring doctors to stay as VA doctors. The second problem is all the red tape. In order for me to be seen as a veteran, I have to have all of my medical records myself. And if I am missing something out of my medical records, the VA won't even look at it, even if it happened during a wartime incident. I used to be a combat medic, so I had to keep track of everybody's medical records so that they'd be taken care of when we got home. On top of that, you also have all this litigation and bureaucracy that has to happen between these doctors and nurses and physicians just to see a veteran. On top of all of that, it is bad for Democrats or Republican politics to cure these veterans. Because if you get veterans in and you actually take care of them, then they go off of your numbers as veterans you are seeing. If you have them on a waiting list or you're just treating their symptoms but not actually taking care of them, they continue to be a number that you can throw at the public to get your votes. Oh, we treat X amount of VA patients a year.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be great though, Josh, to say, hey, we've cured this many patients for a year? I'm not sure I'm buying that part of it. The rest of it makes sense to me. I'm not sure I'm buying that part of it. But to me, really, when you have doctors at the VA saying the best thing that can happen to a vet is to come with a situation that we can't handle, and we get to outsource them to the private sector, that tells you everything you need to know. Why don't we just tell these guys, look, okay, you're qualified. Here's your card. You can go to any hospital, any doctor to get the treatment you need. And we don't pay less than insurance pays. We pay the same amount that private insurance pays. Because then doctors and hospitals will want these patients, and you can shop around to get the shortest wait list time you can and get in there and get seen. And not have to drive 2 or 3 hours to the VA that you're supposed to go to and all these other kind of problems. It just doesn't make sense, which tells you there's more going on here. It's not just logical. There is ideology at work. You cannot admit, if you're on the left, that this doesn't work. You cannot admit that the problem is socialized medicine. You cannot admit the problem is the government can't run things. Because there goes your whole philosophy. You can't admit that. It's just like, look, we're going to talk about this next hour. The economy's shrinking again. We're in a recession again. If we do it one more quarter, technically it'll be a recession. But we already know it's a recession. So what do they have to say? Well, we must not be spending enough money. Not enough investment. Not enough investment in our infrastructure. We must not be taxing people. They got to double down on everything they're saying. They can't admit that it's because they're overregulating, overtaxing us, and making it difficult for the economy to start moving again. They can't admit that because it destroys their entire ideology. They can't admit these things. They just can't. Let me get Nancy in. WJR Detroit works at the VA as well. Nancy, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp, in for the doctor. Go right ahead.
Hi, this is Nancy. I worked at the VA for quite a while, and I have lots of perspectives. And there was a gentleman that just called in and said it should be privatized. I absolutely agree with him. VA is nothing but managed care. However, I really want to impress upon everybody out there, there are a lot of very, very good and caring people who care about these veterans that work for the VA healthcare system.
I agree.
And I understand there is an issue with what we call waits and delays. I know that our facility has been working hard on this for a few years now, trying to get the waits and delays situation fixed. I know at my facility, we don't require a lot. If you come in, you need to be seen, we see you. We may find out later you're not a veteran or you don't qualify, but we get people in.
Nancy, did you ever see or hear anybody talking about the secret waiting list, the waiting list to be on the waiting list? Did you guys have anything like that?
The waiting list once. I happened to be in a meeting, and there was great concern about it, but without going into a lot of detail, just for privacy purposes of where I am.
It sounds like you're saying, yes, there was a secret waiting list.
No, I don't know if it was a secret waiting list. There was a waiting list, and what happened was there was a decision to start calling these people, but when you cut it off, someone who applied 10 years ago, I mean, what they were trying to decide is how far back can we call these patients and get them in, because by now, certainly they have health care somewhere else.
But that tells you there's a huge problem. If you don't even know how far back to go to call these people, well, this guy's been on the waiting list for a year. Surely he's had help by now. I mean, that's a pretty big problem, Nancy. Thanks for the call. Yeah, they're on the waiting list to be waiting. We're waiting to wait. We just got to wait to be waiting. Once you get on the waiting list, then you're waiting. But while you're waiting to get on the waiting list, you're not really waiting. At least you're not counted as waiting. And then that way we get our bonuses. That's what's going on. It's crazy. Can we get Jerry Seinfeld on? Can we tell him that we have another episode? I know the show's over, but can we call him back? Can we just do one extra? Hey, he's doing all kinds of stuff on the net now. He's got that Comedians in Cars Drinking Coffee. Maybe he can do one little episode on there. Can we get that? Can we get that, Neil? Get that started, all right? And we'll go 50s on him. 50-50. Habsies. Come on. All right, we'll take a few more of your phone calls on this. And, hey, I also got some news on a new over-the-counter drug that may be coming that might get some people excited. Maybe some of the vets. Maybe this is something they could give away free to the vets who are on the waiting list. We'll talk about that. And President Obama, he's getting into something really important for the country. I'll tell you what it is in just a moment. 855-400-SAVAGE. Get you in. 855-400-SAVAGE. My name's Greg Knapp, in for the doctor. Hey, my name is Greg Knapp. I'm in for the doctor on the Savage Nation. And yeah, okay, there's a lot of problems with the VA. We've been talking about it. But hey, maybe this will make some of the vets feel better if we could just get Cialis to be an over-the-counter drug. What? Oh, yeah. Two large drug makers working on it. Cialis is Eli Lilly and Company, but they're working on a deal allowing the French drug maker Sanofi SA to sell a non-prescription version if the regulators approve. Did you know Cialis makes more than Viagra? $2.2 billion for Cialis, $1.9 billion for Viagra. And they say the reason they think it should be allowed is because there's illicit online sale and fake and stolen Cialis being sold online. So if they make it over the counter, then everything will be okay. Of course, you got to worry about the safety concerns. I have a question. Why does Cialis have people in two separate bathtubs? I don't quite understand how that works with the whole message. Why separate? Wouldn't you be in the same bathtub? Is that too risque? Am I allowed to say that? Did you hear what happened at an Easter service this year? Yeah, sometimes they'll call up the children, and they'll have a little sermon, and they'll talk to the children. So they called up all the children, and the preacher was talking to them, and the preacher said, "Now, can anyone here tell me what resurrection is?" And little Johnny raised his hand and said, "Yes, Johnny." Said, "Preacher, I don't really know exactly what resurrection is, but I heard that if it lasts longer than 4 hours, you have to seek medical help." All right, maybe Cialis. And then we got President Obama meeting with the NFL commissioner to talk about concussions. Can we check the Constitution where the President of the United States is working with the NFL on concussions? What are you talking about? Why is he involved in everything? And it's not just Obama. Last few presidents have been doing that. They get involved with everything. And they're admitting it. They're happy to do it. The White House Communications Director. The President approaches the concussions issue as a parent. Mm-hmm. A lot of change he can do is not just outside of Washington, but also outside the parameters of the government. It's the latest example of how he's attempting to leverage the president's position to influence social norms in areas not directly under his control. Leave us alone. It's like his wife with the lunch. I'll take care of what my kids eat. Oh, we're going to get into that next hour, too. We're definitely going to get into that next hour, the whole lunch thing. See, because if you don't agree with Michelle Obama on what your kids should eat, then you want to politicize food. What? Are you kidding? Nope, she's serious. Let me talk to Bob in Georgia on line 5 on the VA. Bob? Go right ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. We're running out of time. I apologize for that. All right. Coming up next hour, Google pushing these driverless cars. I love a driverless car. It sounds awesome. However, there's no steering wheel. There's no brake pedal. There's no gas pedal. Are you ready to give all those up? We're going to get into that. My name's Greg Knapp. I'm in for the doctor on the Savage Nation.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Hey, how you doing? My name is Greg Knapp. I'm in for the doctor on The Savage Nation. You can join us at 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE, or michaelsavage.com. Well, Google is pushing these new driverless cars. They got the prototypes on the road. Sounds awesome, except for one little thing. And we're going to get into that in just a second. No steering wheel, gas, or brake pedal. But hey, you don't need those. I mean, you got to let the robot do it. Then Michelle Obama really, really mad at these evil Republicans who want your child to eat fast food and die. And Edward Snowden says, you know what? The White House is lying about me. I was trained as a spy, and I worked as a spy, and they don't want you to know the truth about this, and John Kerry calls him a traitor. Huh. We got all the audio for you. It's all coming up this hour of the Savage Nation. 855-400-SAVAGE gets you on board. 855-400-SAVAGE, michaelsavage.com. Have you seen the video yet of the new Google cars? They're trying to get about 100 to 200 of these prototypes out. They're going to have them zooming all around out by their headquarters in California. And they look like a combination of a Volkswagen Bug, a Mercedes smart car, and a Fiat 500. It's some kind of a amalgamation of those three vehicles, right? It's only a two-seater. It has a couple feet of foam on the front so that if it bumps into something, it doesn't hurt anything. It's only going 25 miles an hour. That's the top speed right now. It's a prototype. It's basically just to whisk you around in the city, right? And only two people can sit in it, and there's no driver's wheel, no steering wheel. There's no gas pedal. There's no brake pedal. There are two buttons. There's the start button, and there's the emergency stop button. That's the only thing you can do as a driver. You can either start it or you can stop it. The rest of the time, man, you're just along for the ride. That's it. And you tell it where to go through your smartphone app. So you call it with your smartphone up. It pulls up. You get in. It takes off and takes you to your destination, and you're done. I mean, this is awesome. Sounds fantastic. Except I'd like to go faster than 25 miles an hour. I mean, I think it would be cool. I would love one day to be able to get in the car with my family, and we've got a three-hour trip, and we can just say, go for it, and then we can all talk, or we could read a book, or we could watch a movie together. I mean, it'd be awesome. It'd be fantastic. On your commute back and forth to work every day, you could actually do work instead of watching the road, and maybe you could get home earlier or leave later. I mean, it'd be cool, right? Okay, but here are the problems I want to ask you about, because here's what I see happening. Tell me if I'm wrong. Here's my prediction. Once they got these cars working perfectly, or as close to perfect as you're ever going to get, so that it's almost like autopilot on a jetliner. Did you see what happened with that Malaysian jetliner? All right, okay, but even better than that. Then I say 20 years, and you will not have the option of having a steering wheel in your car. What? What are you talking about? I like to drive. I don't care. I love to drive. I don't care. But I want to do that. Who cares what you want? Listen, the government elite, they're going to tell you this. Hey, these new driverless cars are for your own good and your own safety. See, we can't trust you with a steering wheel. Because 45,000 Americans die every year on the roads. And if it would save just one life, wouldn't it be worth it? And see, the way that we save lives is that we have these cars talk to each other. Right? They're all going to be on the same system. And so they've got the radar, they've got the lasers, they've got the cameras, they've got everything they need to drive efficiently, and they talk to each other. So we can get the flow of traffic up and running. We'll have to build fewer roads because we won't have the kind of traffic we have now, because we won't have people cutting in and out in front of each other and yelling and honking and shooting the finger at each other and doing all this other kind of nonsense. We won't have the accidents on the road that cause all the traffic jams that we have. We won't have these problems. We won't have people texting while driving because they're not driving. We won't have people calling on their phones because they're not driving. We won't have to worry about DUIs anymore because they're not driving. The computer's driving. But the only way it really works, so that it's seamless, so that we can keep the traffic going, so that we make sure that nobody's getting into an accident, is for everybody to have the computer drive their car. Everybody. You can't opt out, because if you opt out now and you're in control of your car, the computer's not talking to your car. And all of a sudden you swerve in front of the computer car, now you start a whole chain reaction. We can't have you do that. But I like to drive. Why do you keep making this about you? This is not about you. This is about safety. This is about saving people's lives. This is about stopping DUIs. This is about helping other people. Why? Look, as people get old, the boomers are aging. How many times have we heard about that? Pretty soon, it's going to be very dangerous for a lot of these boomers to drive, but they don't want to give up their keys. So what we're going to do is give them a driverless car. They can drive until the day they die. In fact, they could even have a heart attack and die in the driverless car, and they'll still get to their destination. Maybe we can have the Google car monitor their vital signs, and if they actually die in the car, they'll just go straight to the funeral home. I mean, boom. You're welcome. I just came up with that. Come on. So is it going to happen? I think so. I think my prediction is maybe 50 years. Maybe 50 years, and you will no longer be able to purchase a car with a steering wheel, a gas, and a brake pedal. Are they all going to look the same? Have you seen them? I mean, they're really not that good looking. One of the big things they're talking about is replacing taxis with these. Here's what they put. This is pretty interesting. It says, the researchers found that New York City's 13,000 taxis made 470,000 trips a day. Their average speed, 10 to 11 miles an hour. They carried an average of 1.4 passengers per trip. Average wait time, 5 minutes. But in comparison, you could have the robot fleet of cars, and it would only take 9,000 of them. They'd be hailed by smartphone. They would have a wait time of less than 1 minute. And for the same amount of profit that current taxi cabs are making, charging $4 per trip mile in Manhattan, you could do the same thing for 50 cents per mile. Whoa! Say goodbye to a job as a taxi cab driver. Say goodbye, Lyft and Uber. And, hey, you got to keep moving with the new stuff. Are you ready for that? Would you be willing to give up your steering wheel, your gas, and brake pedal? I'm telling you, it's coming. Let me get Aaron on KCMO. Aaron, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp, filling in for Dr. Savage. Go right ahead.
Hi, yeah. I've been listening to the show for a long time. I'm a driver for a company here in Kansas City, Missouri, that basically all we do is drive people around. They get in our cars, you know. If something like this comes out, we're out of job.
Yep.
It's that. You
got to start thinking of what else you can do, Aaron.
Well, unfortunately, I never went to high school. I finished high school, and I just started in on the workforce. This best job I've ever had.
I don't blame you one little bit, but I do think that's on the way out. But, Aaron, you got some time. Look, they're not ready for this yet. You got some time. But, yeah, it's coming down the pike. There's no doubt. Thanks for the call. It's coming. Look, with this, and I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing, because you're going to have time. You know this is coming. You're going to have to come up with something else. It's not tomorrow. Like I said, maybe 20 years from now, you'll be able to get rid of all the taxi cabs and the delivery vans and the airport shuttles and the city buses. And really, why would you need a city bus driver? Why would you need a bus driver at the airport to take you from the economy lot? Well, Greg, some of these things, how are you going to tell the person, wait a second, wait for me, and you're waving at them? No. How do you pull the robot car without a steering wheel into the bay to get your oil changed? How do you respond to people giving you hand signals? How do you pull up and back up to the front door when you're moving to make sure that you can get things in and out of your car easily? How do you drive places you're really not supposed to drive? You know where it says restricted and you're like, ah, nobody's here. I'm just going to drive through there anyway. You won't be able to. They don't want you to. You know, here's a question too. Are they going to let you speed? I mean, right now, everybody goes at least 5 to 10 miles over the speed limit, right? Are they going to let you speed? Well, the Google prototypes that they've been testing on the highways, they actually have allowed them to speed to go along with the flow of traffic. But if all of them are robot cars, will they let you speed? Or what they really should do is increase the speed limits on all the roads, at least on the highways, because if you've got the flow of traffic going the way it's supposed to go, man, you could go 80, 90, we could have the Autobahn all over the United States. That'd be pretty cool. Except, you know, that burns more fossil fuels because the faster you go, the more gas you use. I don't know. Maybe if you have an electric car, you're allowed to do that. But I don't know about the rest of them. Maybe we'll just have to make all these electric that we'll plug in and then we'll get the power from the coal-powered plants. Well, yeah, there's a lot to think about here. What do you think? I'm telling you, it's not going to happen for too long. Let me get Rob, line 7, Hartford, WDRC. Rob, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knappen for the doctor. Go right ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, Greg. Hey, in 50 years, there's not going to be the private automobile anymore because gasoline's going to cost too much. There's only going to be mass transit. The public has to know about peak oil. They're not talking about it, but they do know it.
Dude, we're not... No. You could not be more wrong, Rob. We were told we had peak oil in the 70s. We have more oil now than we ever have. We keep finding more oil, and in fact, there are some scientists now who say that the Earth is still producing oil from the middle of the Earth, and it's just continually being pumped out. I don't think 50 years... We've got enough oil for another couple hundred years. In fact, I've got a little story later on. We are now creating, in the United States of America, 10.4% of the world's crude oil. We're producing so much natural gas, we don't have enough pipeline capacity to move the natural gas. The only way that we'll run out of gasoline is if our federal government puts so many restrictions on it that it's not worth getting it out of the ground. And they're working on it. They're working on it. But it's not going to happen anytime soon. Love your thoughts on that. Would you give up your steering wheel, your brake pedal, and your gas pedal? Because that's what they're doing in these cars. Two generations from now, your kid won't even get a driver's license. And if you want one too bad, you don't get to, because you're just being selfish. Take your calls on that, then we'll get into Michelle Obama going crazy on your lunches. 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE. My name's Greg Knapp, and for the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored...
Hey, how you doing? My name's Greg Knapp. I'm in for Dr. Savage on the Savage Nation, and we're talking about this new Google driverless car because there's no steering wheel. There's no gas or brake pedal. You can only push start and stop. That's it. And I'm telling you, in 50 years, every car is going to be like that. You're not going to have the option. By the way, when they first started testing these, the first Google driverless cars did have steering wheels. And the point was that, hey, if this doesn't work very well, the driver can take over. But guess what? They had a problem. To have people just instantly take over when they thought there was a problem was creating more problems than it was solving, and basically they don't trust you to take over. So that's what they're going to do. It's not going to bother you. Let me get some of your thoughts on it. Let me go to Curtis in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Curtis, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knappen for the doctor. Go right ahead.
Hey, Greg. First, you do a great job taking over for the doctor when he's on vacation or out.
Thank you.
But, you know, these cars sound awful. Like the cars we've seen in the movie Demolition Man. So I wonder how long after these cars come into play that we'll all be using three seashells to go to the bathroom.
Well, does life imitate art, or does art imitate life? That's a good question, Curtis. If you guys aren't familiar with Demolition Man, Sylvester Stallone, and Wesley Snipes, and it was in the future, and there were driverless cars, and they were safe, and then there were the three seashells for the bathroom instead of toilet paper, and they never really explained how that worked, if you remember. Well, from one movie to another movie, what about iRobot? Remember that? And the robots got mad and then wanted to kill people because they were directed to by their supreme intelligence. I mean, we can go all day on the sci-fi stuff. But I also love this idea of what will it do to traffic tickets. Brandon, WBAP Dallas, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp, filling in for the doctor. Go right ahead.
So how are they going to, if there's driverless cars out there, where's revenue going to come from if they don't have any traffic cops?
Right, there's no red light tickets, no speeding tickets, no DUI tickets, no anything, right? What are they going to do?
No.
Well, don't worry, Brandon. Don't think for a second they're not going to get their revenue out of you. Here's what they're going to do. They're going to charge you by the mile. They're going to just charge you by the mile. And there's going to have to be enough money to make up for all that last revenue. They're not going to let all that slide. Are you kidding? They're going to find a way. Don't worry. They're going to get their pound of flesh. Like I said, there's a lot of good things about driverless cars, and the best is safety. Sure, that's awesome, and then convenience and all these other kinds. But are you ready to have that happen? And are you willing to give? This is my question that nobody's answered yet. Are you willing to give up the steering wheel and the brake and the gas? If they can prove to you that it's much safer than if you're driving, are you willing to give it up? Paul, WABC, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knappin for the Doctor. Go right ahead.
Hey, Greg. This is the thing. Bothers me the most is I'm in New York. We got trains, so you can fill 100 people in a car. Tell me how much space 100 of those little cars are going to make up for this mass transit. Where are these Democrats going to say, well, you know, that's more space, more fuel taken up instead of jumping on the train? There is a plot. There's got to be a plot trying to take us over.
Well, thanks, Paul. I appreciate the call. I'll tell you this. The only place that mass transit really does work is in cities that are extremely dense, like New York. And even there, you subsidize the subway. That stuff doesn't make money. Even in Europe, they subsidize the railways. They don't make money. And when you look at the cost for devising and putting in all these rail transit systems, they cost more per person moved per mile than cars do. Even when you have to build more roads, and much more than buses do. But they like it because they call it sustainable. But if you have these kind of cars that are, and everybody's driving the small little guy around, and we don't have all these huge SUVs anymore because they hate those. You know, you don't need that. How do I haul all my kids around? Well, we'll have a special one for you. I don't know. Then they're going to say it is green. They're going to say this is green. Hey, Nathan, KSFO, excuse me, wants to jump in on what this will do to taxi drivers. Nathan, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp filling in. Go right ahead.
Hey, how's it going, Greg? You doing
it? Uh-oh, I think we lost Nathan. Nathan wanted to say, look, we've already got the tech companies come in that are making it hard for cabbies to make a living with Lyft and Uber. This is really going to destroy us. Yeah, it is. And you better be ready to move on with it. That's all you can do. You got to roll with the punches and find something new to do. It's coming. My name's Greg Knappin for Dr. Savage, Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, my name's Greg Knapp, in for Dr. Savage on the Savage Nation. And I'm going to get to this story about Michelle Obama saying that if you want them to let up a little bit on the lunch program that she has, it's because you hate children and you're politicizing food. We'll get to that in a minute. But a lot of great calls on some ideas about these Google driverless cars. No brake pedal, no gas pedal, no steering wheel. And what will it all mean to the future that we've got to get to? And how about this? How about we start with Bev in Detroit, WRJ? She's talking about how this is tied to the green agenda. Bev, you are on the Savage Nation. I'm sorry, WJR. Go right ahead, Bev.
You know what? This is a freedom issue, okay? Does anybody really think that you're going to be able to just go like you want to go, like you do now? This is going to be where, okay, you don't work, do you? No. Okay, well then, you can't really go out every day. This is where this is gonna go. Does anybody really think that with that system, you would have the ability to just go and come as you please anymore? This is too scary to me.
It's a very interesting point, Bev. You know, in China, they're trying to get more cars off the road because of the pollution. Because they have a serious pollution problem. Could it get to the point where they say, hey, listen, like you said, you don't really have anything you have to do today. We're not going to let you just drive around for fun. No, you're going to have to wait until you go to work tomorrow, and then you can stop by and do your errands on the way home. But we're not going to, you know. Well, listen to Gina McCarthy, the EPA administrator, cut 8. This is when she was trying to let people know she doesn't hate cars. Gina McCarthy.
actually, I'm not against cars because I actually think many people need them, including myself, probably, when I don't have my husband's car available. But I'm a big proponent of public transportation and smarter growth patterns.
Yeah, smarter growth. I'm not against cars. Cars are okay, I guess. But I want smart growth and sustainability, she also went through. Oh, yeah, see, this is all about being smart and sustainable. And so I'm not against cars, just against you and cars. Oh, man. I like this. What about what Rod has to say in Sacramento? Rod, you are on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp in for the doctor. Go right ahead.
Hi, Craig. It's actually Marysville, about 40 minutes north.
Okay.
Anyway, what if somebody hacks the system? They have an Edward Snowden-type guy, like, high up in the Google Corporation. Then what?
I think it's an excellent question. You know, we had a story earlier this week where we've got hackers now hacking people's iPhones and iPads and locking them from the outside and then demanding a ransom to unlock their iPhones and their iPads. We've got people doing that now with PCs, that they're finding a way to get in. And listen to how bad this is. They're doing it to businesses and individuals on their PCs and their laptops. And they're saying, we have locked your computer. Everything in your computer now is gone to you unless you pay us $400. And people have taken it to computer experts, and they can't undo it. They are totally stumped by how this is working. Who knows? Who knows? I mean, this is the brave new world that we're getting into on whether or not we're going to be able to handle this. Let me get Bo in, KCMO, on whether he would ever give up the steering wheel and the brake pedal and the gas pedal. Bo, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp. Go right ahead.
Never in 1,000 years ever give up my right to have a steering wheel, a gas, and a brake pedal in my vehicle, ever. I just can't imagine a life without being able to drive yourself where you want to go.
I think you speak for a lot of people, Bo. Thanks for the call. But here's the thing. They're probably not aiming at you and me. They're going to aim at the millennials and the people coming up after the millennials because, hey, guys, you don't need a driver's license. We're going to take you around. Hey, don't you want to be sustainable? Hey, don't you want to be cool and hip and green? Hey, you don't need to drive. You don't need a driver's license. We're going to take care of you. And, hey, if we do this, even at the age of 12, you can just call up a car and go drive somewhere. You don't need mom's permission. Good stuff, man. There's a lot to go on with this. I appreciate all the great calls. I want to get into this one with Michelle Obama. You know that her Let's Move campaign is her big thing. CNN the other day even claimed that she's the one that signed this into law, the whole lunch stuff. But, of course, she didn't. They misspoke. They were a little bit busy still trying to cover the Malaysian airliner. But what's really going on here is she thinks that she's smarter than you, and she thinks that she knows what your kids should eat. So she wants to do it from on high, on what Washington, D.C. says all your kids should eat. And she's really upset. She has a big, big editorial in the New York Times that came out yesterday. And she's mad, and she thinks these Republicans are trying to politicize food. She said, we're now seeing attempts in Congress to undo so much of what we've accomplished on behalf of our children. And she goes through, these House of Representatives, they're considering a bill to override science by mandating that white potatoes be included on the list of foods that women can purchase using WIC. Okay, wait a second. You can use WIC to purchase soda and potato chips and candy, and yet we're not going to let them purchase white potatoes? I mean, this is just getting crazy, man, because white potatoes are evil now. No, it's part of a healthy meal if you eat it correctly. But, no, they're talking about, politicizing food. Now, here's what Michelle Obama won't tell you. Cato Institute will. The Government Accountability Office reported, last school year's rollout of the updated new school lunch program drove 1.6 million paying students off the lunch rolls. Some schools abandoned the program altogether. The new rules have resulted in millions upon millions of dollars of wasted food. Kids throwing it away. In the Los Angeles Unified School District alone, they say that they've lost $18 million in wasted food a year. $18 million a year in wasted food. They called it a flop, a disaster. The principals reported, as Michelle Malkin is reporting out of the LA Times, massive waste, unopened milk cartons, uneaten entrees being thrown away. Not only do they tell you the fat content, the sugar content, the salt content, they tell you how many vegetables, how many fruits, and even which colored vegetables and fruits. And so kids can't even eat the vegetables and fruits that they always want, and they end up just throwing it away. So the LA Unified School District said, we're out. So did the Arlington Heights District in Illinois. They said, no, we're out of it. You know why? They pointed out that these federal guidelines prevented them from offering things like hard-boiled eggs, hummus, pretzels, and certain brands of yogurt and non-fat milk because the containers were larger than 12 ounces, even though that's what the kids wanted and needed in order to be full. But no. The only reason you could possibly be against any of these programs that Michelle Obama is rolling out is because you want children to eat junk food and get fat. Huh? The LA Times blasted the National School Lunch Program. The program, pushed by the Obama administration and passed by Congress, is afflicted by rigid, overreaching regulations that defy common sense. That's from the LA Times editors. That's not some conservative website. Fruits and vegetables rank as the least popular items, so requiring schools to offer one of each for each student practically guarantees an enormous amount of fruits and vegetables will go to waste. Even worse are the rules about what kinds of produce must be offered and in what form. They make it nearly impossible for them to put vegetables in soups or lasagnas where the kids might actually eat them. Oh, but if you listen to NBC, ABC, CBS, they explain to you, Michelle good, Republicans bad. Listen to Cut 13. Listen to this.
Food fight. Michelle Obama, as we've rarely heard her before, returning to her campaign by accusing Republicans in Congress of playing politics with children's health.
An unlikely gladiator entered an arena today, someone who's carefully stayed out of the fray until now. First Lady Michelle Obama came out swinging today about an issue close to her heart.
She more than anybody else is keeping the focus on this very important topic.
That's right. I will never understand the downside to encouraging people to eat healthy.
I know, with a third of children obese or near obese, there have to be changes made, and as someone who ate school lunches growing up, boy, I wish there had been healthier options.
Yes, I mean, how could there be a downside to this? This is reporting. We just gave you the downside. It doesn't matter how, quote, healthy your meal is if the kids won't eat it. It doesn't matter when you call it healthy and it makes it so you can't even give a kid a hard-boiled egg or yogurt or the milk that they want because it's in a 12-ounce container. It doesn't make it healthy when you have to go around these regulations, end up with your lunch being something that doesn't even fill the kids up in the high school level. But no. I mean, who could be against this? She's a gladiator. She's going in there like a gladiator. And the only people who could possibly be against this are the people who want kids to eat junk food and die. Let me get Steve in KKOH Reno. Steve, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp in for the doctor. Go right ahead.
Yeah, she's not an expert. She's not a dietitian expert. And now she's going to tell our kids what they should and could eat?
Well, she is looking at the science. She may not be an expert, but she's making herself an expert. And she is looking at the science that is out there on the very important foods. But, you know, even in her New York Times piece, she says, data showed that the lack of nearby grocery stores negatively affected people's eating habits. No, it doesn't. The Times actually ran a story showing that the so-called food deserts in the inner city don't exist. And that there was zero correlation to obesity and how close you were to the nearest grocery store. Zero! And yet she still is pushing this stuff. Listen, this is what this is really about. And this is the same thing with the Google cars. They know more than you. The government elite is smarter than you. They're more educated than you. They're better than you. So you should just shut up and sit down and listen to them, and they're going to tell you how to live. See, we're too dumb to know what's good for us. We're too dumb to do the things that are safe. We're too dumb to eat right. We're too dumb to pack good lunches for our children. And thank God that we have the Michelle Obamas of the world, and the John Kerrys of the world, and the Nancy Pelosi's of the world, and the Harry Reid's of the world to tell us how to live. To tell us that we're not smart enough to drive our own cars, so we're going to have to take the steering wheel out and the gas and the brake pedal. We can't trust you with that. You're not smart enough to take care of your own kids, so we're going to give you free lunch at breakfast and lunch, in addition to the food stamps. You know, We're certainly not going to let you have your kid have a cookie during snack at school. No, we're going to take that out of his lunchbox. This is the government elites telling you how to live. They think they know more than you. That's what it boils down to. Let me get Carolyn, WABC. Carol, you're on the Savage Nation. My name is Greg Knapp, in for the doctor. Go right ahead.
Hi, Greg. I'm going on 80 years old. And I'm so happy I'm on my way out because they're making the country like the night of the zombies. I've been smoking since I'm 13. I have a couple of beers every day. And I'm the healthiest person. I've lost three friends this year who ascribe to the healthy diet and the exercise and everything that this administration is trying to foist on us.
Well, Carol, God bless you. I hope you live another 80 and that you just enjoy your life. certainly not recommending kids. Don't start smoking at 13. Well, Carol did it, and she's 80. Probably not a good idea. A couple beers a night. I hope that didn't start at 13. But, hey, you know, she's enjoying her life. She shouldn't have the right to do that. She should not be doing that. We should stop her because she's impacting all of us. You know, I had a conversation with a friend like this over the weekend. We got into this whole thing about, I forget how it started, but he said something about motorcycle helmets. I'm like, well, if you want to ride without a motorcycle helmet on, so what? Well, it's impacting us. How? Well, because, see, if he gets injured and then we have to take care of him. Well, actually, with the helmet off, he'll probably die quicker than with the helmet on. They've done studies on that, so he actually could be saving you money. But listen, it's his life. Just like adults shouldn't be forced to wear a seatbelt. Now, I do. And I think you're stupid if you don't. When I ride a motorcycle, which is rarely, but I do, I have a motorcycle license, I wear a helmet because I think it's smart. But I think you have the right to do what you want to. It's your life. Why is it the people on the far left are only pro-choice when it comes to killing babies? Why is that the only thing they're really pro-choice on? And everything else that really is your body, they're against. I don't get it. But that's where we seem to be. We really do see, you're not smart enough to understand this. You are impacting us because if you get in a wreck or if you do this or if you do that, then we have to pay for it and we have to pay for it. We have to pay. Well, then quit paying for it. Leave me alone. Quit taking my money and quit telling me how to live. When are we going to have a revolution on that? That's where I think the revolution needs to come from. 855-400-SAVAGE gets you on board the program. 855-400-SAVAGE. Got an update on the Malaysian jetliner and on this big Chicago skywalk that got a little freaky. We'll hit those for you in a second, too. My name is Greg Knapp. Hey, my name is Greg Knapp, in for Dr. Savage on the Savage Nation. I want to correct a mistake I made a little bit earlier in the show when I said Michelle Obama was mad that Congress wanted to let people buy white potatoes with their WIC. And I said, hey, they can buy soda and candy and chips. Well, that was food stamps I was talking about, and I think I said WIC, and I apologize, because it is true, on WIC, you're not allowed to buy white potatoes. Huh? Any other potato? Yeah, sweet potatoes and yams, but not white potatoes. Well, white potatoes, just too high in sugar. It's a potato! It all depends on how many of them you eat. Well, no, sorry. This is how crazy we've gotten. I mean, it is nutso. Let me talk to Donna about this, by the way, in Maryland, WMAL. Donna, you are on the Savage Nation. My name is Greg Knapp, in for Dr. Savage. Go right ahead.
Hi, Greg. You know what's so unnerving about this is the real war on women in Maryland. We're all the feminists. And since when do the wishes of a few take precedence over the wishes of many? Which brings me to the other point, which is, clearly, this is all about the politicizing of the destruction of our civil society. And, you know, the silence of the feminists is deafening.
You're saying that to tell these women what they can serve their kids for lunch?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point, Donna. Thanks for getting in. I appreciate it. 855-400-SAVAGE gets you on board. Let me get Eric in out of Alabama. Eric, you're on the Savage Nation. I'm in for the doctor. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'm just kind of shocked at all the calls of, you know, it just seems that, you know, it's like any change is some type of, you know, infringement on our freedom.
No, not any kind of change. We've got change every day, Eric. But when you have a change where Washington, D.C. tells you what to feed your kid for lunch, instead of you and your local school, yeah, that's taking away your freedom. When you lose the steering wheel in your car, yeah, that takes away some of your freedom. Yeah, it does. Thanks for the call. My name's Greg Knapp, in for the doctor.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400.
Listen to this. That's the difference. He's got a special executive order program. Listen, when you reward something, you get more of it. Of course, these families are saying, hey, did you see what President Obama did with that Executive Order Dream Act? Get our kids up there. They'll get amnesty, too. No, they had to be here before he signed that order. Really? Anybody really think if they catch a 5-year-old kid who came here illegally so that he could pursue the American dream, and maybe he's staying with an aunt or something, they're going to do an alien Gonzalez on him and send him back? No, that only works if he's from Cuba. And we got the TV camera. No, of course not. So we got that going on. We went from 6,000 in 2011 to 60,000 this year. They're expecting up to 130,000 by 2015, and they don't want to admit the real reason is because of what President Obama did with his Executive Order Dream Act. No, we don't want to admit that at all. But the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson, testifying today, says, well, we selectively enforce immigration through prosecutorial discretion, and Congress doesn't have the right to micromanage us. Quote, I think that the legislative branch, whether it's the enforcement of immigration laws, the enforcement of criminal laws, or how we conduct counterterrorism operation, needs to be careful not to intrude into the discretion that the executive branch should normally have. You cannot, with all respect, micromanage certain functions that the executive is charged with carrying out. Yeah, see? Well, they tried to push back some, and they said, well, wait a second. Representative Trey Gowdy, Republican South Carolina, he said, is there a difference between prosecutorial discretion and just ignoring parts of the law that you don't like? Well, I believe there are, said Johnson. I think there comes a point when something looks like a wholesale abandonment of the enforcement of the law versus prosecutorial discretion. Well, can you tell us which is which? Because, wait a second, so President Obama on his own did this executive order that said if you came into a country, our country at a certain time and stayed a certain amount of time, we're not going to enforce our immigration laws on you. We're going to give you a temporary work pass, and we're going to give you temporary rights to live here. Isn't that abandoning the law? No, that's just prosecutorial discretion. Okay, then what is abandoning the law? We had that report that came out a couple weeks ago, 33,000 illegal aliens who were in the process of being deported, who were convicted for other offenses here, including murder and assault and DUI and robbery and rape, that they were released back into the general population. Hey, make sure you come back for your deportation hearing. Is but I don't know. We haven't abandoned the law. Oh, no. And in fact, as the Washington Times is reporting, Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson also said courthouses should be immigration enforcement-free zones. See, if you're coming to the courthouse for something, we shouldn't ever say, oh, by the way, you're here illegally, aren't you? Sorry, we're going to have to deport you. No. It's an immigration enforcement-free zone. Well, where do we enforce it? Anywhere? Ever? Well, Jorge Ramos is the anchor for Univision and now Fusion. And he was talking to Politico. And he was actually lying to you about President Obama and how tough he is. Listen to cut 6 of Jorge Ramos.
They're blaming Democrats, and they're blaming President Barack Obama, supposedly for not enforcing the law. Just tell that to a Latino.
Right.
President Obama has deported more than 2 million immigrants in the last 6 years. So I'm here to try to talk to Speaker Boehner. Let's see if he wants to talk to us.
See? I mean, just try and tell it to a Latino that Obama's not enforcing the law. All right. I'll tell it to anybody who will listen. Jorge Ramos knows. He's not an idiot. He's not stupid. He's very intelligent. He knows that President Obama has changed what they count as a deportation. See, all the way up until President Obama became president, a deportation was when an illegal alien who was caught in the interior of this country was sent back to his home country. That was a deportation. The Obama administration is now counting everybody we catch at the border that we send back. That was never counted as a deportation before. That's what they're counting, and that's how they got the huge numbers to supposedly say Obama's breaking records in the number of people he's deporting. It's just not true. And Jorge Ramos knows it. And he doesn't care. He doesn't care. And he says, well, you know, the thing is, you got to understand how important immigration is to Hispanics. Let's hear cut seven.
I mean, as Americans, the most important issues for Latinos are exactly the same. It's the economy, it's job, it's healthcare. But immigration is something personal for us. Half of all Latinos, so over 18 years of age, are immigrants.
If it's jobs, healthcare, and the economy that the Hispanics in our country care about just as much as every other ethnicity, and I hate to divide everybody by that, but that's what they always do, and that's what Jorge's doing, then they should care about immigration, and they should care about illegal immigration, because the illegal immigration is hurting the jobs for people who are the low-skilled workforce. It's hurting their wages, and it's hurting their economy. It's hurting their health care because their emergency rooms are overrun. It's hurting all of that. For some reason, Jorge seems to believe simply because of the color of your skin, you want more illegal immigration. Well, I know an awful lot of Latinos who have a longer family history of being born in this country than I do, who are very upset about illegal immigration. And I know a lot of legal immigrants who are very upset about illegal immigration. So for Jorge to act like somehow, and what he means by immigration reform is amnesty. So that's the answer? Anybody believe that? That has really looked at this and isn't just doing it for political reasons? Look, I don't know how many times I got to say, I'll say it one more time. I'm a first-generation American. My mom came over here from Great Britain. But she came over the right way with a sponsor. My mom, my aunt, and my grandma. They came over with my great-uncle, who married my grandma's sister. He was there for World War II. So he came back over with his new bride. They wrote back to my grandma and said, hey, I know that your husband died in the war. My grandpa died in the war. He flew for the RAF. How about you come over and we'll help you start a new life here in America? My grandma said, okay. My grandma and my mom and aunt lived in his basement. My grandma took in sewing until she got a job with General Motors and worked there until she retired with a pension. Never drove anything but a GM car till the day she died. She was proud of her British heritage, but she became a naturalized citizen and she flew an American flag outside of her yard, not the Union Jack. She became an American. And she never took a penny from any government program that ever existed. That's the way we're supposed to do it. And I have no problem with legal immigration from any country in the world if you do it legally. But we can't take everybody. We just can't. And you've got to have some kind of control over who comes in and who doesn't. And when they say that you don't, it's like, what planet are you from? These H-1B visas? There's all kind of studies out right now showing that we are graduating 50% more college graduates in these tech fields than there are jobs, and yet these tech companies say we need to import more foreign workers. How does that work? Why? We know there are over 1 million people in the tech field out of work right now who could fill those jobs, and they're not getting hired. Why? Because the foreign people will work at a cheaper rate. That's why. That's why. Let's be honest about it. Now, how is that fair to American citizens and to the legal immigrants who are already here? Explain that to me. I'm willing to listen. 855-400-SAVAGE gets you on board the program. 855-400-SAVAGE. Take your calls on all of that. And then we'll get into what Edward Snowden is saying about how he was trained as a spy. John Kerry saying he's betraying the country. We'll hit it all. My name is Greg Knapp. I'm in for the doctor on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation.
How you doing? My name is Greg Knapp. I'm filling in for the doctor on the Savage Nation. 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE. And we're talking about the problem of the illegal alien situation. And it's gone to the point now where we've gone from 6,000 unaccompanied minors coming across illegally in our southern border in the year 2011 to 60,000 this year. And they're expecting 130,000 by 2015. Whoa, that ain't good. And you're telling me that doesn't have anything to do with the president doing an executive order on his own so-called Dream Act? And listen to this. We talk about all these people coming across the border and swarming into South Texas. The USA Today just putting up earlier this afternoon, scores of undocumented immigrants from Central America have been released at Greyhound bus stations in Tucson and Phoenix over the past several days after they were flown to Arizona from South Texas. They just released them on your own. Wait a second, they're here illegally. Yeah, but we don't have any place to put them right now, and we can't process them all, so they're just going to have to come back later. So you've told them to come back later? Well, yeah, kind of, as far as you know. They just released them. Even the amnesty groups are mad about this. Humanitarian groups, they call themselves, concerned that the immigration officials are dropping off the migrants at bus stations to fend for themselves without food, water, and basic necessities. Yeah, I mean, if you come into our country illegally, we're supposed to give you all that stuff. Cindy Whitmore, the Phoenix Restoration Project, an advocacy group for illegal aliens. It's not safe, and we're concerned for their physical safety. And so am I. It's not safe to try and come across illegally. Some of the kids were crying. Some were infants that weren't fully clothed. They didn't even have diapers. They didn't have formula. Did they have moms? And that's what we're doing. We're just dropping them off. Let me get your thoughts on all this. Let's start with Dina in Florida, line 4. Dina, go right ahead. You're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp, in for the doctor.
Hi, Greg. I want to tell you that it is really a pleasure to hear you. And what you're saying kind of makes me feel secure in that other people are thinking the same thing I am. I was telling the screener there that I'm not particularly into labels, and I told him that I really feel, you know, I'm 58 years old. I'm a product of a generation of what we would like to call free thinkers. But I think. So I'm a compassionate human being. I want to care about other people. But I need to think about what is really happening. And the illegal immigration problem in this country is totally out of hand. I think it's a political issue, actually. But, you know, I wanted to tell you that my parents were first-generation Americans. My grandparents came over, like your grandmother did. Legally, they found a way to make it in this country. I learned American values. I uphold American values.
Amen. I got to run because I'm up against the clock. But thank you. And you're right. I mean, it's a balance between compassion and understanding. You know, there's trade-offs for who you're compassionate to and how far you can go either way. And for every decision, there's an unintended consequence.
Join.
Before the awareness was out there, when I was young and played football briefly, there were a couple times where I'm sure that that ringing sensation in my head and the needing to sit down for a while might have been a mild concussion, and at the time you didn't think anything of it. The awareness is improved today, but not by much.
Does he mean his awareness is not improved very much? I think we're starting to understand the whole Obama presidency. Too many hits to the noggin. Should have stopped footballer. Oh, he was talking about that they haven't improved concussions for kids in football. Oh. Well, I don't know. I have to look, and now we know Hillary had a concussion that her husband said took 6 months to take care of. Yeah, Hillary, that was a pretty big hit on the head. It took like 6 months for her to feel better. You know? Gave me 6 months to cat around. You know? I mean, I was by her bedside every night trying to take care of that woman. So, yeah, concussions. That's what our president's working on. You know what? It's bread and circuses time, isn't it? It's like, don't look over in Syria. Don't look at the illegal alien problem. You just keep all these balls in the air. Bread and circuses. We're gonna distract you with NFL talk about concussions. That's what we're gonna talk about. We're gonna distract you with what your kids are eating at lunch. We're gonna distract you with anything we can think of except the stuff that's really important, that's really going on in the world. Oh, concussions with the NFL. That's what our president's doing. Okay, great. 855-400-SAVAGE. Get you on board the program. 855-400-SAVAGE. You know, the last caller talked about compassion with the illegal alien issue, and I totally agree. You know, we want to be compassionate people. We are a compassionate people. You realize we already take in more legal immigrants than any other country on the planet. But you got to look at the compassion for all. Compassion for the small businessman who's trying to compete with the business that's doing it the wrong way and hiring illegal aliens and paying them under the table and not paying all their taxes and not paying them the proper wage. the compassion for the legal immigrant who had to wait in line and paid a lot of money and did all the things he was supposed to do to come into this country legally. The compassion for the low-skilled laborer here in America who's seeing his wages depressed because people are willing to come in from other countries and do it for much less money. And where's the compassion for all them? Compassion goes both ways. We have Frank in Miami on this line one. Frank, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp. In for the doctor, go right ahead.
Hey, Greg, you're right about the circus ball, so let's just take the one about immigration for now. And I just want to comment as a person that came to this country in 1976 at the age of 19, legally. But then, you know, I lost the job. I didn't go to school. And instead of going on welfare and trying to get the government to support me, which was a big deal in the late 70s, I joined the Army for 10 years. So I earned my citizenship. And if you talk to the registered Hispanic voters, I guarantee you that over 60% of us are against any type of illegal amnesty or whatever you want to call it, because we just can't take everybody. You're right about that.
Great stuff, Frank. And hey, thanks for doing it the right way, and thanks for your service, and I'm glad you're an American citizen now, and God bless you. That's the point. I mean, you nailed it. And I've met a lot. I mean, I lived in Dallas for 5 years. I met all kinds of American citizens of Hispanic ancestry who were just like Frank, saying, Greg, what? Just because I have brown skin, they think I like illegal immigration? That doesn't make any sense. That's what they're trying to sell you. Chris, in Kansas City, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp. In for the doctor. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon, Greg. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Well, listen, I'm all for it with compassion and everything, and legal immigration. There's nothing wrong with that. This nation was prosperous because of all the ancestors we've had come from overseas, see the Statue of Liberty, and just get all enthralled about doing it the right way.
Yes.
Okay? Now, when you got people jumping the border, risking their lives to come in the country, hey, my hat's off to them to a degree, but they're doing it the wrong way. And Obama and all them letting this happen, they're basically taking American citizenship and flushing it down the toilet. It's becoming worthless at every passing day.
No, you're right. It's totally devaluing it, and it's totally devaluing the rule of law. And that's what he's been doing since he got in. He keeps going around Congress saying, he can't wait. Well, you know what? He needs to wait. He is not a dictator. He is not a king. He is not an emperor. He is the president. And he's acting like he doesn't have to deal with Congress and blaming them for everything. It's what he does all the time. You know, because they don't do exactly what he says. It's because they're horrible, evil people, so you got to do it my way. And you know what? He's been getting away with it because our Congress won't stop him. The Supreme Court won't stop them, and it seems like the people at the ballot booth won't stop them. So at some point, I throw up my hand and say, well, then I guess we get what we deserve, right? Well, I mean, we'll see what happens next time. 855-400-SAVAGE, get you on board. 855-400-SAVAGE, and you are in. I also want to get you this one on Edward Snowden. You know all about Edward Snowden, with him getting all the information about the NSA and leaking it out there. He's in Russia now because we took away his passport, and he doesn't want to sit in prison the rest of his life, so he's staying in Russia. Now, I have mixed emotions on Edward Snowden. You know, mixed emotions. It's kind of like your mother-in-law going off a cliff in a brand new Lexus. I got mixed emotions because I'm glad he told us all the stuff that the NSA was doing to spy on us. I think we needed that information. Absolutely. But he also gave information on how our country is spying on other countries. I don't quite see how that helps us. You don't think other countries are spying on us? Of course they are. That's the way the world works. I also wish that he tried to do it through a whistleblowing program instead of just doing it the way he did. So I'm torn on him. But I think the country's, I think our government's also lying about him. I mean, Edward Snowden came out to Brian Williams and said, I was trained as a spy in sort of the traditional sense of the word, that I lived and worked undercover overseas, pretending to work in a job that I'm not and being assigned a name that was not mine. I don't think there's ever been any question that I'd like to go home. My priority is not about myself, though. It's making sure these programs are reformed. I don't work with people, though. I'm a technical specialist, a technical expert. I don't recruit agents. What I do, I think what he means is what I did, is I put systems to work for the United States, and I've done that at all levels, from the bottom on the ground all the way to the top. He also said he lectured at a counterintelligence academy for the Defense Intelligence Agency. Well, Wolf Blitzer got Susan Rice on, and Susan Rice, of course, now National Security Advisor to President Obama, and he asked her about what Edward Snowden said. Let's hear cut 9.
Finally, on Edward Snowden, he's now saying he was an undercover clandestine officer working as a highly trained spy for the United States. Is that true?
No.
No. Okay, now, I've got a question for you. I swear it's not a trick question. From what you know about Susan Rice and what she's told you on TV before, and what you know about Edward Snowden and what he's been telling you, and what you've seen checked out, who do you believe? You know, this is what's so sad. This is what's so sad about how our government has been lying to us for so long. Fast and Furious, the IRS, Benghazi. I mean, on and on and on we go. That now, I am much more willing to believe Edward Snowden, who fled the country with secret documents and broke the law. I am much more willing to believe him than I am our own government. I mean, remember Director Clapper? Clap on! Clap on! He didn't make that. But he lied to us in front of Congress when they asked him, are we gathering any type of data on Americans? And he said, no, not to my knowledge. He admits now that was a lie. So who do you believe? So Wolf Blitzer followed up on it. Cut 10, please.
Edward Snowden was a contractor working for the NSA and other elements of the intelligence community. Obviously, he is accused of sharing and disclosing illegally some of the most sensitive information of the United States government, allegedly. And our strong view is that rather than give television interviews, he ought to come home and have his day in court, where he will be treated with all the protections and fairness that our judicial system allows.
I'm trying to understand this angle that they're going. All the Obama people are on the same page. John Kerry saying the same thing. He should come home. He should man up. He should come home. He should come home. He should come face the music. He should. What are they? Are they kidding? No, he's not going to do that. Not unless he's given some kind of immunity, so that we can learn everything that he took and everything that he knows. And otherwise, he's not going to come here. Why would he? Would you? So why are they saying this? What is their agenda? I'm trying to figure this out. Is it so that they look tough? Is it so that they can continually paint him as a criminal? Is it do they really expect him to, quote, come home? John Kerry, Secretary of State, was asked about this interview with Snowden and whether he really was a government spy. Kerry dismissed that, said it's twisting the language. I guarantee you Edward Snowden's telling the truth. I mean, really. I mean, the way that they're not really answering these questions. Said if he's got a complaint with what's wrong with American surveillance, come back here and stand in our system of justice and make his case. Are you on crack? Has John Kerry been smoking crack? Really? He continued, but instead he's just sitting there taking pot shots at this country. Violating his oath that he took when he took on the job. And betraying, I think, the fundamental agreement that he entered into when he became an employee. The fact is he has damaged his country very significantly in many, many ways. He's hurt operational security. He's told terrorists what they can do now to avoid detection. And I find it sad and disgraceful. So John Kerry talking about betraying the country. John Kerry. Let's see. Can we go in the Wayback Machine? I'm my own special effects, too. 1971, John Kerry coming back from Vietnam, supposedly throwing his medals over the White House fence. We learned later they weren't his medals. But hey, so what? And then going and testifying, and we find out that he's throwing all of his fellow soldiers under the bus. Many of these Vietnam veterans believe that John Kerry betrayed his country, believe that what John Kerry did was really an act of a traitor. Let's remember this one. Cut 11, John Kerry, 1971.
Absolute horror of what this country, in a sense, made them do. They told the stories of times that they had personally raped, cut off ears, cut off heads, taped wires from portable telephones to human genitals and turned up the power, cut off limbs, blown up bodies, randomly shot at civilians, razed villages in a fashion reminiscent of Genghis Khan, shot cattle and dogs for fun,
who's Genghis Khan?
Poisoned food stocks, and generally ravaged the countryside.
Yeah, we're gonna have to find this Genghis Khan guy. Oh, Genghis. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that was it. Okay. But this is the guy that's going to say we got to look out for the people that have betrayed the country. And remember now, there are lots of Vietnam vets that says John Kerry made all that up. John Kerry was lying. John Kerry didn't have any stories. He was totally making it up. But hey, that was a long time ago. I mean, you know, he's totally different now. Totally different now. By the way, man, he really had down that elite Massachusetts accent back then, didn't he? Oh, it just makes you want to slap him. Really does. That's not nice, Greg. Come on. That's the way he talks. He comes across as another one of those guys that thinks he knows way more than you, that you're lucky that you even know him. What do you think? Who's telling the truth? Edward Snowden or our government? Is that a trick question? No, I'm serious. Who do you think is telling the truth on this? And do you think Edward Snowden deserves some immunity to come back here and tell the truth and get all this out and get all this done? They don't even know what he has. They don't really even know what he's stolen all the way. They have no idea. That should scare us, too. That's some scary stuff. 855-400-SAVAGE, get you on board the program. 855-400-SAVAGE. Maya Angelou died yesterday. And I'll tell you what, I think she leaves behind a great legacy of writing. Very simple to understand writing, but writing that hits you deep in your soul. And she had a very interesting interview with Oprah Winfrey not long before she passed, where she talked about the power of love and God. And I'm going to get that for you in just a second. Hang tight. 855-400-SAVAGE. My name's Greg Knapp, in for the doctor on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage.
My name is Greg Knapp, in for Dr. Savage on the Savage Nation. 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE. You know, we were playing that 1971 testimony from John Kerry because he's calling Edward Snowden someone who betrayed the country, and many Vietnam veterans believe that John Kerry betrayed the country in 71 when he said all those horrible things about our servicemen. And it looked like he relied on people who were imposters anyway, who weren't really Vietnam vets, who testified next to him. And this guy basically made this crap up and threw our men and women under the bus who came back and were then spit upon and called baby killers. And why did John Kerry do it? What's the real reason he did it? Political calculation that would help him reach higher office. That's why he did it. Not any noble reason. Give me a break. He had planned to have a life in politics, hopefully end up president, since before he started that testimony in front of that committee. And he thought this would help him. And you know what? He was right. It did help him. Look, I mean, he almost became president. And he became Secretary of State. He became a U.S. Senator. Of course, it didn't hurt that he married two rich women. Married his way into a lot of money. Hey, you know, that's not bad. I wish I'd married into money. I mean, honey, I love you, but I wish you'd been rich, too. That would have just been a kicker. I mean, listen, we've had a great 23 years, and I hope it keeps going, but it would have been really great if you'd been rich when I married you, too. I was working on it. It didn't really happen for me. But it was political calculation that it worked for him. Hey, did you know that we're still looking for that missing Malaysian jet? And did you hear now that they're saying, one guy saying the pings that we thought we heard from the jet really weren't the pings from the jet? And the other guy goes, well, we're not sure about that. Wait a second, where were the pings coming from then? What, just out of the blue, out of the ocean, just pings start coming up? Ping, ping. Wait, I don't even understand this now. The U.S. Navy's Bluefin 21 finished its final underwater mission in the southern Indian Ocean Wednesday, after going over 330 square miles, according to the USA Today. Now, though, they're saying they're going to start searching again. 21,600 square miles. And it will take a year. Oh, wait a second. Why are we still searching? But look, I'm sorry, but the plane's gone. The people are dead. We're done. Why are we still looking for it? And why are we paying for it? Hey, China, you're up. Mostly your people on the plane. Take over. Pay for it. We're done. I don't understand that, do you? Hey, thanks for having me with you. My name is Greg Knapp. This is the Savage Nation. I was in for Dr. Savage.